You have the bridge.
Indeed. Shields to maximum. Photon torpedoes, full volley. Fire. Computer report.
Enemy shields are intact.
We are the Borg.
I know very well who you are. Stand down your weapons.
State your designation.
Emergency command hologram. At your service.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, ironing his blue science uniform.
Tyler, you're not the captain, and I'm not the captain. What does that mean, Tyler?
Well, it means some other character is taking command, Cam. And we've seen this happen often enough on Star Trek, and it oftentimes leads to something interesting. And look, we have first officers. They're used to doing that. But I think the fun parts are when we get, say a blue uniformed science officer or a doctor or something. They're in the command seat. They've got to make decisions that aren't, you know, just natural to them. And I think what we're going to do is we'll tackle like the most notable moments here. So I don't know, maybe if Travis Mayweather sat in the captain's seat for about 30 seconds and hailed a Suliban ship, we'll probably not spend that much time diving into it, but I think there's a lot of interesting moments here that we can pick apart.
I like that Travis Mayweather gets so little to do, and even then you want to rob him of a moment.
Name his most memorable captain moments, Cam. Gotcha right there. I think we'll have some fun with this, because what we'll do, though, okay, so we'll dissect this, and then I think we have to kind of assign them a captain. Like, what captain out of all the main ones do they take after the most? Is it the one that they're directly under command? Or, I don't know, maybe Mayweather has a bit of a spark of Picard in him after all.
That's what I was going to say, for sure.
They're both probably having fun on Risa as we speak.
That's right. So why don't you start? What is your first candidate?
Yeah, this was kind of a wild one, and it took a little bit to get going, but the ECH, the emergency command hologram that's the doctor was programming into his own system, this started mostly as kind of a daydream in Tinker Tenor Dr. Spy. He even had to do a bit of a fake out at the end of that episode, but then he actually really did push hard for it in Workforce, and we get to see his ego just inflate more and more by the time we get to an episode like Workforce, where it's literally him and Harry Kim fighting over who should be in command of the USS Voyager after everyone else from the ship has been kidnapped.
Yeah, that's a really fun one. That was high on my list of early ones to mention as well. I love the back and forth in my head of just trying to decide if the ECH is a good command program.
Like, he, okay, so maybe he knows the notes, but not the tune or not the melody. Is that how the saying goes, Cam?
Well, I believe, like, to be a good captain, you have to have very strong people skills. That's not something I generally assign to the doctor.
No. A, not great bedside manner, and B, I don't know, does he inspire confidence as he tells people what to do?
Not really. I mean, the Voyager crew often is a little down on the old hologram programs, but nonetheless, I don't know that he has that calm under pressure and that voice that, like, if you're in danger, you're going to look to him for guidance. I don't know that he has that.
What if you're an alien and you encounter this advanced starship from the other side of the galaxy and you hail them and the doctor comes on screen? Are you going to take this guy seriously? Do you know even better?
Yeah, I don't think you know better. I think you would just assume, well, I guess he's captain of a starship. He seems to know what he's doing. Or maybe that's why he's lost in the Delta Quadrant. I don't know.
Yeah, really? Okay. So, when we watch him in Workforce, though, and he is really trying to push Harry out of the way, you know, Ensign Kim, mm-hmm. do you understand where he's coming from? Do you think he has like a good argument that he probably knows more just in terms of like library memory about command procedures, but does it take a little something else to be a successful captain of a starship?
Well, you know, as you said, knows the words, but not the music. And I think that's the difference in that situation, is that Harry Kim doesn't have the vast libraries of knowledge in his head that the Doctor has, but Harry has more of the understanding of human dynamics, which I think comes into play. And, you then can make the argument which one's better. But I think the Doctor lacks that, which is always going to be an issue for him as a captain.
Yeah, and Harry, just through osmosis, he's been observing Janeway for like six and a half years at that point. The Doctor's down in the sick bay or in the holodeck. That's where, or I guess he has the access to the mobile emitter at this point, but it's not like he's spending all his time up on the bridge. I don't know if he just picks up on a lot of those intuitive things that, say, Janeway does, and she's able to pass on to Harry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, we saw over the course of Voyager, Harry had more shots to learn because he's, you know, in the captain's chair in Future's End in like season three. So we're seeing it go all the way through Voyager. He gets his little spots here and there, whereas the Doc really only gets like what, like a season and a half or something?
Yeah.
So we don't see like the growth of the character, whereas like Harry, we can understand how this journey has informed how he would be a captain. The Doctor didn't really even get the idea until season six in Tinker, Tanner, Doctor, Spy.
Do you think by the time we get to the Alpha Quadrant again, the Doctor's trying to push others to adopt this emergency command hologram? How far do you think he gets with Starfleet in his endeavors to do so?
Yeah, I don't know if the ECH ever really took off. I mean, Rios has one in Picard.
I was going to bring that up. He does have, he has the, is it an ECH or is it the ENH, the emergency navigation hologram?
Good question. I know he had a lot of them.
He had five of them. So let's try to do it. He had the one that is all about navigation. He had the one about tactical. He had the medical one. He also had the engineering one had a Scottish accent. And then he had the one that's all about
the morale officer.
The morale officer. So yeah, I don't think he had an ECH, but would we have had Rios's kind of crew had it not been for what the Doctor had been doing and developing his own program on Voyager for those 7 years?
I would argue no.
Yeah, but so I think that is a legacy for the Doctor in that case.
I think so too. It is interesting though when we get to that endgame, the Voyager finale, and we're seeing the crew in the future. You know, Harry's a captain, but the Doc, there's no real allusions to him expanding his command, you know, training. Like we don't see, well, he's a captain now, or he's in, you know, a first officer or anything like that. He's still just the Doctor.
Yeah, he is married, and I think he adopted the name Joe. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he have a kid at that point? And did that not raise some eyebrows about the exact mechanics of him having a child?
Well, he had a kid in the episode Blink of an Eye. I don't remember if he had one in Endgame, yeah.
Maybe I'm just confusing those two moments there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Cam, out of all the captains, the big ones, the main ones that we're all so familiar with, who do you think the Doctor is most like? I think he's distinct, but I wonder if we could kind of narrow it down.
Yeah, like I'm ruling out your Kirks. He's not a Sisko. I wonder almost if the Doctor's a little bit like some of the lesser written Picard episodes in season one of TNG.
Where he's yelling at Wesley Crusher?
Yeah, he's a little prickly. Doesn't quite have the kind of the family dynamics yet. You know, his temper towards people isn't quite as good as later on, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you can make a good argument for that. But I would wonder, just because of his in-depth knowledge out of everything he's got to know, I don't know, maybe he is a kind of a Kirk figure, in fact, in that Kirk knew the book inside and out. He also had a little bit of that dynamism that I think the Doctor was going for. I don't think these are perfect comparisons, but
you know. One-to-one.
So, Cam, what's next for you? What's on your list?
Well, let's talk about Data, because, I mean, that is such a cool one. we see Data, you know, getting to sit in the captain's chair in like the episode Angel One, but later on he actually becomes a significant role, overseeing the Sutherland during the Redemption two-parter. He's in command in Gambit. And I always really liked the idea of Data being a commander and being really good at it. Because, you know, you saw, for example, Spock in Galileo 7 in the original series, and it was kind of a nightmare. I like that Data is just really, really capable and competent. It doesn't have that sort of limitation of, well, Data, you're just an android, so you don't quite have it.
The XO on the Sutherland kept insisting on that.
Yeah, that's his problem.
Yeah.
From what we see, Data's pretty badass.
Yeah, the stuff that sticks out to me is, though, we know that he is emotionless, but he can be stern. And you feel as if, like, yeah, let's not push it too much. The stuff that sticks out to me is what happened on the Sutherland when he had that XO who is saying some racist things like, you know, Klingons shouldn't be counselors and androids shouldn't be captains. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Klingon thing I get to a certain degree, but at a certain point, Data just called him out and was like, you have to stop undermining me. I am in command. You have to follow the chain of command here. Mm-hmm. And look, Data was proven correct. Like, Data does know what he's doing there. And I love it. You love it too, when we get to watch our characters be hyper competent.
Mm-hmm. And I like that it never felt also like the show had to like stoop to giving Data wacky comedy moments when he was being a captain, like, oh, Data missed the point of that moment. Like, I like that the show never kind of talks down to Data when he's in the captain's role. He always seems calm, cool, and collected, and will generally make the smart decision.
So what do you think the difference is? If we're talking about two distinct artificial life forms, Data and the Doctor, what is it about Data that just brings him ahead? Well, I don't know. Maybe you disagree, but I think that Data is like a better captain potential than, say, the Doctor from Voyager.
Oh, totally. I think it really just comes down to ego. Yeah. I think the Doctor has an ego that often rules him, whereas Data does not. He is egoless.
Do you think that at a certain point, if the emotion chip, never came into the equation and he was, you know, a captain by the time we got to season 5 of TNG. Do you think that's the lack of emotion is to his benefit, or do you think it ultimately could be to his detriment when making command decisions?
Well, I was going to ask you that actually, because okay. you look at like Kirk, for example, right? Who's an amazing captain, but emotion is such a key part of the decision-making process. And I do wonder if long-term, if you have Data as a captain, if that is a problem at some point. You know, we obviously saw key missions where Data's skill set really did work very effectively. But I wonder if he would have the abilities to oversee a ship for, you know, like a 5-year mission, for example.
Yeah, I wonder if he has the confidence of the entire crew at all times as well, especially if you're just lacking that human quality, that relatability. But sometimes, like, maybe you don't need to be the relatable sort to be in commands. Maybe that's the job of the XO.
Maybe. I would have liked to have seen Data do more diplomatic style missions in the captain's chair. I think that would have been really interesting, because that's the sort of mission in my head I'm wondering if you would have some limitations with, because that's not really what we saw too much of on the show. I mean, you know, there was all that talk about a Captain Worf spinoff back in the day.
There's a lot of Dorn talk about it. Yeah,
that's what I'm referring to. Yeah, but I mean, I feel like a Captain Data show would be more interesting. I don't think Brent Spiner really has any interest in doing that at this point in his life. But at a certain point, I think that would have been an interesting concept to explore.
Do you think he would have been mostly doing like charting nebulas rather than going on these diplomatic missions?
It does seem like he would not necessarily be like a Janeway, for example, who's like, I know we're supposed to go over there, but hey, let's go investigate this nebula. Like, I think Data would completely fly past all these like situations and phenomena. You know, he would always be the one with the eye on the prize.
Yeah, but do you think that they would be sending him on like too many of these diplomatic missions? Or do you think he is mostly somebody who's kind of focused on, you know, the science at hand? Like I know what you're saying is like, it's that curiosity factor is probably not going to distract him as much as some of our other notable captains here.
Well, I think if I'm Starfleet, I would be sending him on the science-based missions over the diplomatic. maybe I would be testing the diplomatic stuff, send him on one and send, you know, a Starfleet Admiral to kind of oversee things or something, or just kind of sit quietly and observe to see how it goes. But if you're dealing with, say, potentially volatile situations involving alien life forms, I don't know that Data would be my go-to.
I just wish every single diplomatic mission, it involved him. Remember when he was trying to learn how to do small talk in the episode Starship Mine on that planet? It would be great if that was every diplomatic mission he was on.
So which captain do you think Data most resembles?
Well, he's the most cold and calculating, right? I think it's probably he's taken after Picard, his own mentor in this situation.
Yeah, I don't think there's, I mean, another really cold and a cold type like that, unless you're like getting into Lorca, but Data's no Lorca.
Yeah. Look, if we ever, you know, kind of dealt with Data beyond Star Trek Nemesis, let's say he was never destroyed, how quick do you think Starfleet would be to give him commands? He was slated to be the first officer aboard the Enterprise. He had been in Starfleet at this time like 20 plus years. Do you think, you know, they would have been cool with handing the keys over to an android permanently?
I mean, I don't see why not, based on the trajectory of that character through the series. I could see it. I don't know if the events of Picard would have thrown a wrench in that operation, but I could see after Nemesis, yeah, I could see Data getting his own command.
Okay. Well, cool. Cam, I'm going to jump over to, I think, a very important one, one that I think we're still waiting to figure out what the future holds, but Saru. Mm. We found Saru to be a kind of a meandering character popping in and out for very much like the first two-thirds of season one of Discovery. Yeah, put him in the Mirror Universe. You have Burnham, you know, trying to infiltrate the Terran Empire with Lorca. Saru is in command for a whole whack load of episodes, like the back half of the season, essentially. And we really found this guy coming into his own. We got a little bit a taste of that with Choose Your Pain early on. But I dig, you know, Captain Saru much more than I think just Science Officer or XO Saru.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when Saru is like in the Mirror Universe arc and he's giving big speeches and sending the crew into battle, it's like, this is the Saru I've wanted all along. I find it like a little frustrating in that when we get to season two, we have Saru going through the Barahai and changing a lot internally as to who he is. But because you have Pike there, we don't have a great understanding of who Saru is a captain later in the season. So I am very much looking forward to season three to kind of see what this new Saru is like in the captain's chair for an extended period.
Yeah, and this is also why I wanted to bring him up. Are we assuming that Saru is going to be the captain of the Discovery going into season three?
I would hope so.
It's his time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know that they kind of ended season two with we'll talk about this later, between him and Burnham, but I do hope it's Saru, just because I think if we now take the captain's role away from Saru, it just feels so abbreviated. You know, it's basically like he was captain for like three or four episodes and then Pike showed up.
Yeah. I also just think about the kind of the mechanics of what Discovery's done every year. And they essentially have a new captain every season. So yeah. I think ultimately what they would want to do is maybe in the final season, give Burnham the keys. Like she's the captain at that point. So I don't know, maybe Saru does it for a season, maybe two seasons, I don't know. But I think it also gives interesting potential for the dynamics between Burnham and Saru once again. Do you think we go back into that kind of sibling rivalry that we got for the first half of season one between Burnham and Saru, where there's even the possibility of Burnham kind of undermining Saru at times?
I don't think so. I think those two have been on such a journey at this point. I mean, when she's standing there, when he's seemingly going to die in an obol for a Charon, I don't think that when that sort of, you know, journey is over between the two of them, that they're going to go back to like bickering on the bridge.
From a dramatic standpoint, I would assume that there are some disagreements, but I agree with you that the bickering, it's not going to feel nasty, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think, not in the same way that earlier in season one was, no.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to be going on? Like, what kind of captain do you think Saru's going to be? Like, I'm just wondering about kind of, if you've got like this real skeleton sort of crew going on in Discovery in season three.
Yeah.
Is he going to let people, you know, wear their vests up to the the bridge? Or is it going to be, you know, this is still a Starfleet vessel. We must abide by all regulations all the time.
Well, and also, how much has Saru changed as a captain post-Vrahi? Like, I feel like, yeah, I don't have a good grasp on this. If Saru is captain in season three, I don't have a good grasp on who that figure in the chair is.
Although we did get to see him implore Tyler and Hugh Culber to fight in the mess hall.
that was amazing.
That was a pretty funny moment where it's just like, okay, well, he's like, this must be done.
It's okay. So if we're seeing a Saru that's maybe a little less by the book, I'm trying to think of what captain that kind of feels like. I can't see like Ben Sisko encouraging fist fights, really. I'm kind of torn. Like, it doesn't seem like an Archer thing. What do you think of a Kirk?
Is Saru a Kirk kind of captain? You know, I can imagine him, you know, out talking a lot of folks, like, yeah, as opposed to out muscling them. I could buy that for sure. He might also just have the curiosity factor as a scientist by trade that maybe Archer has as kind of an explorer. I wouldn't throw the Archer thing out of the question because I also think Archer is very wet behind the ears. Saru is going to be a very wet behind the ears captain. Like, we're watching, I guess we did see Sisko turn into a captain, but this is, you know, Saru's first command as well.
Yeah, and you know, now that I really think about it, of Archer's journey through like the Zindi War and everything, you're right. He is a character that would often, you know, maybe let his temper get the better of him or have more kind of the ups and downs that, say, other captains didn't necessarily have. And I do think that's maybe where Saru kind of is, just judging from the Vrahi stuff, if they do continue that into season three. I could see him having that sort of Archer, I don't like to say instability, but a little more of an unpredictable edge than maybe you would get from, say, a Picard or a Janeway or a Kirk.
Yeah, okay. Cam, what's on your list?
There's one I think we need to talk about, and that is from Scotty on the original series.
Yeah.
Scotty, to me, is very interesting in that, you know, growing up, for me, I fall in that generation that discovered Scotty through the films, where, you know, if you didn't know, you know, kind of the avuncular kind of guy who's saying, I'm giving it all she's got, Captain, he was very much a comedic figure to me in terms of the films. And then when I dove into the original series, I would get these episodes where Scotty's in charge. And, like, there's no flashy Scotty on, you know, in the Captain's Chair episode. You know, he's in the chair in, like, Taste of Armageddon, Journey to Babel, Friday's Child, a bunch of them. But I always thought it was fascinating to see him in that role, to see just how competent and, like, commanding an officer he was on the bridge, and that it really did have me scratching my head by the time I finished, you know, season three of the original series, wondering, like, why did the movies just blow all that?
I was going to ask you about that as well, because it's interesting that you have, you know, it's really like kind of Sulu's journey towards being a captain in the movies. And we don't have that touched on at all with Scotty, which is a little baffling to me, especially seeing what he is capable of throughout the series.
Yeah, because I think they make mention in Relics that he said he just always wanted to be an engineer.
Yeah, which I can buy that. Yeah.
It's fine, but it's just like, they wrote him to be such a commanding lead on the bridge. Like, honestly, when I watched Scotty on the bridge in some of those episodes of TOS, you could totally sell me on a Scotty spinoff where he's a captain, because I think James Doohan is that good and has just like, he has this like flint-eyed look he gets where he's figuring out problems. His interactions with the crew is very different than Kirk. Like, he seems just more calmer in a way. Like, Kirk has more of an energy to him, whereas like Scotty always seems just a little mellower and a little more, you know, more of a tighter presence of mind on a situation.
You feel as if like he's going to institute whatever the captain's orders are, but he can be flexible about it at the same time in order to make sure that the mission's a success.
Yeah. Do you think it, like, Scotty's approach to being in command is sort of like being an engineer? Because, you know, being an engineer, it's about machinery and what you can do with the machinery. And so that when he's dealing with a situation, he's kind of working through, you know, the gears and everything to kind of figure out how a situation should resolve, versus Kirk, where, you know, he's kind of slingshotting back and forth between logic and emotion in many ways.
I picture Scotty's command style as Ed Harris in Apollo 13, where he dumps a box of supplies out on a table and says, "This is all we have to help them get home."
That is actually a really great example. Yeah, that actually is a really good comparison point. And I am bummed we never got more Scotty in the captain's chair. I just think it would have been so fun. So
with Short Treks, do you think that we could get a Grand Moff Tarkin version of Scotty? He's leaving the Dyson Sphere to go head out to his retirement community. We got one last adventure with him, and that's kind of like a bigger than a shuttle, but smaller than a starship sort of vessel that he was departing on. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. I take that back. That was the ship that he was originally on. Yeah. And then remember, they gave him the shuttle from the Enterprise to get there.
Right, yes. I mean, this sounds like a horror show. I mean, I guess we could get Chris Doohan to voice him, but...
Do they sound alike?
Well, he did play Scotty in the Star Trek Continues fan films. So.
How was his accent?
Yeah, so... Let's just say he's not quite as good as his father those accents.
Well, why don't we hire an actor to voice to voice him? How's that?
Fair enough.
Okay. It's one last mission of him in a shuttle, and he has to bring aboard a ragtag crew just as their ship is destroyed, and they have to get to some other starbase, and they don't want to listen to him, or they encounter obstacles along the way. That could be a short trek to watch.
Totally. You know, Data had his adventure on the Sutherland. Give Scotty an adventure on some other, you know, Starfleet vessel. I would be totally down for that. So do you think he is like a Kirk in the chair, or because, you know, you think naturally you think maybe he's inspired by the captain he sees every day, but I don't know, like Scotty, there's a calmness to him that I feel like Kirk is more
I'll tell you who I think it is. I think he's got a bit of a Pike in him. I think he's got that easygoingness of Pike, but also that high level of competency where I don't see Scotty as an emotional of a character as Kirk, and I think Pike is a little bit more aloof as well.
Now, which Pike are you thinking? The Bruce Greenwood or the Anson Mount?
I'm going with Anson Mount in this situation. Yeah.
I think I agree. Like, there's a real like calmness under fire there that Scotty always seemed to show.
Not Courage Under Fire.
Not a bad movie.
Yeah. So look, with the Strange New World spinoff, do you think we get kind of an appearance of Scotty as a junior engineer aboard the ship, I don't know, by season 4, and maybe he's taking some lessons from Pike at that moment?
Well, I would have said that's maybe too fan servicey, but then I think about the Kurtzman Company and their ongoing mission to have legacy characters show up. I think this is probably on the table. Yeah.
Is Chris Doohan licking his lips because he's expecting to get tapped for that role?
No, that's me licking my lips to get Chris Doohan in the role.
Okay. Cool.
They're getting my letters.
Dear Chris. Yeah. Okay, Cam, I've got a fun one here. I really like this moment here with in the episode Disaster. Troy is left in command of the bridge. There's no communication going on throughout the Enterprise D. It's up to her to kind of fix the ship, or else a whole lot of people are going to die. She's constantly being undermined by Ensign Ro, and we also have her trying to tap the expertise of Miles O'Brien throughout this. I think this is really fun to watch Troy take command of the Enterprise D at this time. And we also see her pursue those efforts to become a full commander. And at a certain point, Riker says to her in that episode in season 7, "I just don't think you have what it takes, you know, no offense." And then she finally is willing to send holographic Geordi to his death, and she gets all 3 pips.
That scene, by the way, is amazing.
Just the look on holographic Geordi's face is pretty...
It's so good. Just like, and I love that the situation is not like hyper tense and explosive. It's kind of seems kind of calm. Yeah. Like, Geordi, go die in the Jeffries tube. Okay, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting one. And I got to say, talk about a trial by fire, basically being forced into command with Ensign Ro calling you on all your S. Like, My God, that would be stressful.
She's got a good 17, 18 years of Starfleet experience over Ensign Ro, but you've got like this like little punk kid really pushing her buttons there.
Well, I mean, Ensign Ro takes shots at Riker, so she's not going to be scared of Troy. Yeah, so I think Deanna's a really interesting one. I mean, she's obviously not interested in becoming a commander or a being a captain or anything. She talks about how it's just something to maybe help herself feel a little more fulfilled. I think she definitely has the skills, and I like that she's doing, you know, the night shift, taking that job. But yeah, it feels to me more like it's just, you know, basically another pip for her, another, you know, badge of honor on her, distinguished career. But I do like it, and I would have really liked to have seen basically a situation where Troy is maybe in a different type of episode than Disaster, which is obviously a disaster episode. I would like to have seen her on the bridge just, you know, conducting a meeting with an alien species or something. I think she'd be really, really amazing at diplomatic missions.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Maybe Data's not the one specializing in diplomatic missions, but if Troy pursues a career as a commander, I totally see her like learning a lot from her mentor, who would be Picard as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a really good person for her to learn from, because I think a lot of the skills that Picard brought to Star Trek and to the TNG itself as well, is a way of being a captain that we hadn't seen before, you know, in Kirk, which is the man of action. And I think that Troy is very much follows in that lineage of that new breed of captain, which is kind of the more sensitive one, the one that's more diplomatic, and the one that wants to talk about problems, all, you know, instead of jumping to action.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to point out, like, her dilemma, though, I think was she wasn't willing to make, like, a snap decision. What she wanted to do is talk to all the experts that she had access to on the bridge in Disaster, get everybody's opinion, and then form her own decision after that. And it looked as if it worked. Like, she made the right decision in the end, even though she was being a little bit jostled by one row during that moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is great training there to have Ro.
So I'm curious. I don't know. We got to see Riker, show up at the final episode of Star Trek Picard in season one. It would have been great if there's just a little cameo of Troy on one of the other ships taking command there.
That would have been fun, or work that into one of the movies. Anything. They should have done something.
Yeah.
So who do you think she follows in the Picard lineage?
Well, I don't. Picard is somebody who's willing to listen to his officers, but he also makes more of a snap judgment. Like, he's willing to make that. So I'm wondering, you know, somebody who kind of wavers a little bit more, though, is Archer. But I also say, how often does Archer sit there and listen to everything T'Pol has to say? He's often quite dismissive of T'Pol.
I don't see Troy locking someone in an airlock.
She's had enough of command at that point. I don't know, like, this is kind of a tough one, because I don't think it's Picard. Like, just my gut tells me it's not Picard. I wonder if it's actually Janeway. I I'm not saying that because they're both women, but they both have that kind of empathy within them that's really I think offers a pathway into giving trust into those under them. Like, that's kind of why I'm leaning towards Janeway.
I think Janeway is solid, although Janeway has a little more of a fire to her.
Yeah.
What do you think of Georgiou? I know we didn't get to see a lot of her, but I think of, like, that first episode, say when they're walking in the desert and Burnham's, you know, kind of getting annoyed and impatient, and you can kind of see that Georgiou has a very, like, calm demeanor in these sorts of situations, and she speaks to her staff in a way that's very measured. And I could see Troy approaching her staff in a similar way.
I love Prime Georgiou. I don't think we got enough of her, just two episodes. I think this is a great comparison, actually. You've totally sold me on this.
Okay, well, solid. Good for me. Okay, well, one that I want to talk about is, let's talk about Worf overseeing the Defiant. I said before, Michael Dorn had talked about Captain Worf, and I think we really need to have a conversation over the course of talking about Worf here about whether Captain Worf even makes any sense.
I think, okay, Cam, I'll just get into it. I think he'd make a horrible captain.
Yeah.
I go to an episode like Rules of Engagement. That's the one where it's kind of a tribunal, and he's got the Klingon lawyer played by Ron Canada.
Yep.
And I just like, ultimately, he makes the right decision, but for the wrong reason, because mm-hmm. it's all just kind of a Klingon like trap.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of like other officers saying that, no, I would have not made the same decision as Worf. I think he's also just too temperamental. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he's got the people skills necessary for command. I think he's a great strategic minded officer. Mm-hmm. I think he is a perfect XO. I would love to have Worf as my XO. I just don't know if I would love to be underneath him as if he was my captain.
Well, we talked about the Doctor's people skills earlier.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say, though, is I think the Doctor is an observant character. I don't know that I would say Worf is that observant.
Mm.
And that's, Worf is definitely, you know, operates on instinct. But I have questions about whether in a very sensitive situation, he would be able to pick up on the social cues maybe necessary to fulfill a proper diplomatic mission or something.
Does he keep going with his gut instinct, or does he take the time to listen to those around him, solicit their advice?
I mean, I don't know how seriously to take the episode conundrum where he thinks he's a captain.
Yeah.
But if this is a glimmer of a Worf who's potentially a captain, it's a little unsettling.
Is he the worst captain candidate we've discussed so far this evening?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, what is it though? Because like he's a fan favorite character. I think he's a very interesting character. I just don't think that necessarily means that he would make a good captain.
Well, here's a question. Okay, we see in DS9, you know, he's captaining the Defiant like starship down. And as you said, Rules of Engagement. But is he at least a solid wartime captain?
On a Klingon ship, I'd say yes.
Yeah.
Although I do question that when we saw him interacting with Alexander on the Rotaran, but that's another discussion. You are in a battlefield situation or you're on a highly sensitive mission. I think that Starfleet Command trusts Worf to do the hard work there, that make the tough decisions. The one thing that I will point out, though, is recall that episode where Worf and Jadzia are on that highly sensitive mission to get, I think it was like a Cardassian dissident, and
yep.
he pretty much ditches that to save Jadzia's life. And that's when Sisko says to him, you're never going to be a captain because of this. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't Sisko trying to be a jerk. It's Sisko saying, Starfleet will put this on your record and you'll never make captain.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that Worf is so driven by emotion that it can be a problem. Obviously, in that situation, it's for, you know, his wife, but we see kind of time and time again, like, Worf can get really blinded by anger. I mean, I don't know that I am ever comfortable as a crew member if my captain's motto is, today is a good day to die.
Yeah. The other thing that's notable, though, is I'm thinking about him in command of the Defiant in Star Trek First Contact. The ship is almost pretty much destroyed. Like, Picard says it's adrift, but, quote, salvageable.
Yeah.
He almost kind of biffed that royally there. And look, he's up against a Borg, but still.
Yeah. So, which captain is Worf most like?
Is this just going to be insulting whatever captain that we pick?
Well, okay, I mean,
I've got one in mind, but you tell me first.
Well, I'm wondering if Worf is inspired by a Captain Sisko who has that sort of more of that ruthless edge, a little more of a warrior edge. He just doesn't have the delivery to pull that off.
Sure, sure. Let me pitch this to you. Does he have a bit of Lorca in him? In which ends justify the means, almost. And there are some stupid decisions made more often than not.
That one definitely was in my head as well. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. I hope Worf doesn't sleep with a phaser under his pillow, but he probably has a Batleth under the bed.
Or no, I think he's got a Mechlith under his pillow.
Oh, okay.
You know this, Cam. Yeah. I don't know if our listeners do, but I literally do have a Batleth underneath my bed.
That's right.
Am I joking, Cam?
You are not.
Yeah, so there you go, listeners. A little insight into Tyler.
So amazing.
I live in a safe neighborhood. No reason for me to keep it underneath my bed. I don't know why it's there.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, so should we move on? What is your next one?
Another fun one, I think. I like seeing characters thrown into situations that are a little unusual. But what about Descent Part 2, where the Enterprise D is left with a skeleton crew, and it's kind of Crusher showing how competent she is, where she's dealing with like 4 or 5 officers left on the ship that aren't competent really at all. I still don't understand how these folks got on to the flagship of the Federation, but she does very well. She acquits herself very well as the commander in charge of the Enterprise at that time.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we saw Beverly in that episode, what is it, the Thine Own Self, where she's doing the night crew and talking about how much she loves just being on the bridge in command. And of course, in the alternate future, we saw her as the Captain the Pasteur. So, like, I totally think Beverly has the goods. I, once again, just feel we were robbed of an episode of her really as a captain doing a lot in an episode. I just think that would have been fascinating. But from what we got, she just seems like someone who almost has, like, I mean, maybe because she's a doctor and a surgeon. She has, like, laser focus.
And she has the human touch that, like, we've said that that's been kind of the Achilles heel for some of these characters. That is not her Achilles heel. She knows exactly how to talk to people, coach them through things. You know, she's like Dr. Bonnie Henry, the chief provincial health officer here in British Columbia, right, Cam?
That's right. And we all listen to her. Yeah.
I wear masks when I go shopping.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, like to me, Beverly, here's a question. Is Beverly one of the very best of the non-captain fill-ins in Star Trek? She's got to be up there.
From like the outset? Because like I think Troy acquits herself quite well, but she is shaky to begin with. Yeah. I don't see Crusher as shaky, you know?
No.
Saru is shaky. Yep. You know, Crusher wasn't. ECH, very shaky, you know?
Spock, pretty shaky off the bat.
Yeah, I think she's just kind of, it's interesting. Like she seems to just have it down intuitively. Mm-hmm. I think being a doctor, well, maybe it was not a benefit to the ECH, but I think it's definitely a benefit to her. It's just that skill set that she has. I also think they've got like, she's got a large kind of crew that she commands within sickbay. I think there's at least one other doctor aboard the ship, and then she's got like a whole cadre of nurses as well. She's used to giving orders, and she has the confidence of people as well.
Not only that, something that she has that a lot of the others don't, she is used to life and death situations in a medical situation and having to make the tough calls, you know, in a second's notice. So that I'm sure like that would aid her immeasurably.
So one of the things that you and I were bummed out about one of the many things we were bummed out about with Star Trek Picard was the fact that we did not get a Beverly Crusher appearance. Would it be just a huge waste of opportunity if we don't get to see her in command of the USS Pester in, you know, say season 2?
They have to do it, right? Like you've got to give Beverly something to do or at least acknowledge where she is at some point in the series. And where better than the Pasteur?
It's also, I love the design of that ship. I think it's one of the best designed ships that we've seen in Star Trek. I just want to see it, you know, realized on, you know, a kind of 4K high def sort of broadcast.
Oh, yeah. And we've seen that both Riker and Troy are more living a domestic life at this point. And so I would like to see Crusher not doing that. I would like to see her still out in space. You know, Picard was basically retired for a long time, too. Like, I want to think that Beverly's still out there doing stuff because it seems like a lot of the TNG cast isn't.
I'd like to think that like the writers were smart enough to put Riker and Troy in situations that were unfamiliar to audiences. They did that with Picard as well. I think putting her in command of a starship, putting Crusher in command of a starship, that would accomplish the same thing. Like I would love to see that realized on screen once again.
Same here. Well, fingers crossed.
Okay, so what captain is she most like then?
Oh boy,
I think she's a Picard. I do think she is a Picard, like, and that's everyone just kind of trusts, you know, Picard, and they trust Crusher instinctively. appears to be highly competent, is able, much like Picard was able to get the kids in disaster under his wing, she's able to take these disastrous sort of officers in Descent Part 2 and really get them working too.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think she has the like tactical abilities and like the focus of a Picard. I would give her a little bit of the Janeway human touch because I think Picard is lacking there, and that's a strength of Beverly's.
Yeah, okay. Cam, do you have another one?
Okay, well, one that I think is really notable, actually, even though it's in a series that maybe some people haven't watched, but that's Uhura getting to lead a party in Lorelei Signal from the animated series. And this is kind of a big deal to have Uhura captaining in a situation on Star Trek in 1973. And I think it's a really, it's a fun episode where the crew is basically, all the male members are taken over by these like, you know, siren-like aliens. And Uhura has to gather a team, including Chapel, and stage a rescue party. And this is not the sort of thing that Nichelle Nichols ever got to do in any type of TOS-related live-action Star Trek. I mean, Tyler, you've seen the movies, you've seen the series. Uhura's stuff is pretty limited.
Did any other character kind of get as little to do, any main character get as little to do as Uhura as she had in the movies? Like, I was just...
No.
It is quite shocking how much they sort of disregarded that character when there was so much potential to let her do some really cool, interesting things and make a whole lot of audience members cheer.
Well, I mean, I'm sure their argument at the time would have been, well, we didn't really have a whole lot to do with a communications officer. But then you cut to the J.J. Abrams movies and look how much they found they could do with Uhura. So it's not an excuse, but I'll bet you that's what they would have said in, you know, 1979.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, they gave Chekhov a lot to do in every single movie. As we were doing our rewatch, you know, years ago, we were shocked every time we watched one of these movies just how much Chekhov had to do. After, you know, Kirk, Bones, and Spock, Chekhov had the most to do in every single one of these movies. And you're telling me you couldn't let Uhura do that too?
Well, yeah, I mean, they put Chekhov in command for one scene in Star Trek V, and it's like, that could have been Uhura.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Yeah, and she's a senior officer over him anyway.
Yeah.
So it's really annoying. But in this episode, again, she's like very capable, leads a landing party, saves the day, rescues everyone, and I think shows a little bit of that, in this case, woman of action, that you would see in a Kirk type. Like, I think... she's very focused. She has that ability to size up a situation and enact a rescue party, which a lot of the other characters we're talking about today didn't lead rescue parties as part of their command. And Uhura pulls all of this off seamlessly, problem solving, you know, an action type situation. So to me, I think she really has the Kirk kind of thing going on.
Would you be in favor of swapping out the Scotty in command short Trek pitch that I did, and maybe we do like an animated, you know, it takes place in, you know, year 4 of the 5-year mission, and it's an animated version of Uhura in command for, you know, a 15-minute minisode, and Nichelle Nichols, she gets to come back and do her voice again.
I would be 100% down for that.
Yeah, all right, well, let's get CBS. I'll just email CBS as I usually do, and you know, for all those that were wondering, yes, I was the one that suggested the Children of Mars short Trek, so you can thank me for that. Cam, who does she take after most?
I think Kirk. I think that's the one I would probably go with.
Okay, I buy that. Look, it seems kind of like the most obvious go-to, but I buy that there. One quick last one from me. You might have like maybe a lightning round in mind, but I just want to point out Geordi in Timeless. That was the Voyager's 100th episode, and we got to see him in command in kind of the alt timeline. It was very brief. It was on the view screen, but it looked great. Like, I it was really awesome to see him in his kind of contact lenses. He's wearing the All Good Things comm badge, but in the First Contact uniform. And it felt as if, like, this is a guy who was meant to be in a command in that situation. Mind you, his people skills, as we've discussed in the past, Geordi's people skills might be worse than Worf's.
They are pretty bad, yes. Yeah.
Do you think he learns a lot in those intervening years?
In people skills? Boy.
Your hemming and hawing tells us quite a bit.
I don't know that, like, people are known to suddenly blossom socially when they're in their 60s. I don't know. Yeah. I hope so. Like, I think LeVar Burton's a great actor, and I think if you put him in that situation, as displayed in the episode Timeless, he has the authority. Like, when he addresses as a captain, I 100% buy it. But I keep being drawn back to my knowledge of Geordi on TNG, going like, eeks, like, I don't know that he's the world's greatest, leader of a group of people. I don't know.
I just keep hearing in my head his junior officers complaining, like, yeah, the captain, he just broke the holodeck again.
Do you think Geordi would be good if they gave him, like, android Starfleet members?
That's actually a great great idea. Yes. We see, like, he never had any people skill problems with Data.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so, Cam, let me backtrack on my answer just a bit. Ask me that question once more.
Would Geordi be good with a crew of androids?
Hell yeah.
Yes.
So I can just imagine, like, what were they called? The F8 androids from Star Trek Picard. I could just imagine it's just Geordi and about 400 of the F8 androids.
Were they called the F8s?
I think they were. I think it was like a play on the word fate.
Yeah, that's a little heavy-handed, I was going to say. As soon as you said that, I was suddenly piecing that together in my brain. Ugh.
Heavy-handed on Star Trek Picard?
Yeah, I know. Very unusual, right? Yeah. So one that I want to talk about. Oh, actually, I guess before we go, with Geordi, who do we compare him to? What captain does he seem the most like?
Worf.
Oh, Jesus. That's grim. I don't
actually,
know.
Like... No, as far as like captains go, this is kind of tough because we only saw him for just a blink, and yeah. We're mostly basing whether he'd be good or not based on what we saw when he was not in command.
Yeah.
Do you have somebody in mind?
Well, okay, let's take a second here and think about Geordi's skills, because we've talked about his lack of skills in certain areas, but you know, he's obviously a born problem solver. His brain is just like a well-oiled machine in, you know, going through scenarios. So like in terms of tactical abilities, he's going to be very strong. In terms of diplomacy, maybe not so much. So I think we are thinking someone who's probably going to be better in terms of, yeah, tactics over, you know, relations with aliens and what have you. So I don't know, who would you say is a really strong tactical captain?
Sisko, but I don't.
Yeah.
Like in that moment, in that short moment, I guess I could say he's a Sisko, but I don't know. Like I feel we're both really reaching.
Yeah.
At this point, you know.
Well, and like Geordi, we've seen on TNG has a bit of a short fuse, which I could see in Sisko.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could say the same thing about Picard as well. Sometimes having a short fuse. It's really tough with such a small amount of screen time.
Okay, no, I got one for you. He's like Captain Jellicoe.
Sold. You know what? Actually, you know what? You might be right.
Yeah. The people skills, right?
Because the thing about Jellicoe was he was actually fairly capable at his job. It's just that he kind of drove everyone crazy.
Yeah, that's true. Including the Cardassians he was negotiating with.
That's right.
That's actually a pretty fun sequence.
It is, yeah. Right. Okay, well, I guess my last of the big ones we'll talk about. Let's talk about Jadzia Dax, who we see taking over the Defiant and call to arms to deploy the mines. But we see her throughout the Dominion invasion arc, you know, piloting the Defiant while Sisko's busy elsewhere with Admiral Ross. So Jadzia is a character I thought was really interesting to see in command here, because I felt like a different show would have said, well, we're putting Worf in command because Worf's, you know, fan favorite. But I loved Jadzia in this role, and I thought that Terry Farrell really pulled it off and had like an improvisational quality to her performance and just to the character of Dax anyways that made her a very interesting captain type.
At order of elimination, though, Worf was on the Rotaran at that point. So, you know, Kira is left on Terraknor. Are you going to retrieve Michael Eddington from prison just to put him in command of the Defiant at that point? Probably not, right?
Probably not, no.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I just love that moment where she's got, like, the burst phaser pulse array. She's carrying around the mess hall. She is getting everybody charged. And who's she taking after? She had witnessed, you know, her mentor, one Captain Sisko, do that, you know, just an episode, or maybe actually earlier on in the episode as well. She really takes to commanding well, and I think it helps that she's got like 8 lifetimes of experience behind her too.
Not only that, but Curzon Dax was a mentor to Sisko. So how much of Sisko's behavior is inspired by Curzon Dax, which is alive and well in Jadzia?
Do you think, like, after Crusher, she is the one that kind of takes to command most naturally?
Well, I think Scotty's up there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think these might be the three, though. Like, these three might be the trifecta.
How do Jadzia's people skills compare to Geordi, by the way?
Oh, just a little bit better.
Just a little bit. Okay. I wonder, do you think she ever took after Captain Bodine?
Oh,
I would the transparent skull?
I would love to think so. I do feel we were robbed, though, of Terry Farrell leaving the show. In season 7, she probably would have been commanding the Defiant in some key episodes.
Yeah, I know. I think she was great. And I just wish that, even in season 6, we got to see it a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. It was just cool to see her in that captain's chair, and you know, look, it was even like I thought that what they did with her on the Defiant, because it was like, everybody kind of played musical chairs quite a bit there, but seeing her, you know, as the pilot made a lot of sense because one of her former hosts was a pilot, one who died in a crash, mind you. So I don't know how good that host was as a pilot. But then we get to see her bump up into the captain's seat as well, and she took to it naturally. Like, she was just such a dynamic character that's, you know, it's easy to imagine why she made such a great captain.
Well, and what I love about Jadzia, too, is she's a life-of-the-party type. She's also, in many episodes, sort of the emotional center of an episode, in that we all kind of look to Jadzia to see responses and how she'll interact with the situation. So when you see her getting battle-hardened, we understand the journey of what this character's gone through in a different way than, say, if O'Brien was in the chair.
Yeah, absolutely. So who does she take after?
I think it's Sisko.
Sisko.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to rack my brain about, she's a wartime sort of commander.
Yeah.
He's a wartime sort of mentor. Ah, yeah. Let's go with Sisko here.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any quick ones to throw?
Yeah, you know, just very quickly, I do want to highlight Harry Kim in Workforce as well. Like, he did have some cool key moments there. I think if not for how bad they treated the character, I could have seen a long career in Starfleet for him there. That's one off my list. What about you?
Well, I didn't bring up Sulu in the episode because we see how he actually does become a captain in Star Trek VI. But let's talk about Sulu in Star Trek Into Darkness in the Kelvinverse. There is a scene where he's threatening to bomb Khan with those torpedoes. And it's basically a Sulu pulling a bluff on command with Bones watching in awe. And I loved John Cho in this moment. This was a look into this version of Sulu that I wish we got more of. It's too bad. We probably aren't going to get another Kelvinverse movie. But I thought he was fantastic here and would have liked to have seen more.
Yeah, I think it might have been his best moment in the trilogy.
Yeah, it's really, really up there, yeah. Okay, well, I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
I think we're trying to make amends for some bad scheduling earlier this year. Rene Aubergenov passed away, and we were covering Star Trek Picard at the time, and we did not really get to do a full episode dedicated to Odo, which I think we've been talking about for a long, long time. But I think let's do it. Let's talk about the evolution of Odo going into next week. This is one of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek. If you ever got to meet Rene Aubergenov at the conventions, he just can't. He seems like one of the sweetest men that's ever graced the earth as well. So it's just very sad that he passed away. And I think we're both very excited to kind of talk about how this character really shaped the mythology of Deep Space Nine, like few others have. And he also went through this transformative character arc too. So I think this will be a great conversation between us.
Looking forward to this one. And, you know, it is in a way good timing in that, you know, you and I have seen, you know, the actor in Vegas almost every year for the last, you know, almost, you know, what, like 8 years or 7 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you know, I go back a little bit further. And I mean, this will be the first summer. I mean, obviously there's no cons this summer, but it would have been the first summer where we wouldn't have seen him. And so, you know, let's, yeah, pay tribute to a great actor and a great character. It's going to be, I think, really interesting. Okay. So you can, of course, also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vorik, should never be in command during Ponfar, Smith.
I'm at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Nog was in command in The Visitor.
And in the documentary.
Yeah. What We Left Behind.
That's right. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.